This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo. Klaviyo is a platform that helps growth-focused e-commerce brands drive more sales with super targeted, highly relevant email, Facebook, and Instagram marketing. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz and my guest today is Laura Gassner-Otting. She's the founder and chief catalyzing officer at Limitless Possibility. She's also the author of a book we're going to talk about today titled Limitless: How to Ignore Everybody, Carve Your Own Path, and Live Your Best Life. Sounds wonderful. Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
So one of the things that I want to challenge you on to right off the bat, because you have got some great practical advice about this idea of how to live your best life, but there's a whole lot of people out there that have a lot of interesting advice. So let's cut through that. So you have in some of the things that you sent me ahead of the show, we all have a similar goal. We want success to feel meaningful. We want our work to matter. And I guess my question would be: is that true? Maybe ultimately we come to that, but is that everyone's goal?
I believe it is everyone's goal. And I believe that the reason that we don't think it's everyone's goal is because we're defining meaningful and matter as being this like higher purpose, lofty goal, as this idea that purpose can only be purpose if it's service, if it's feeding the lepers in India, if it's sacrificing the shirts off our back. And the truth is, none of us want to feel like we're invisible. None of us want to feel like nothing we do matters. We want to feel like we matter to somebody, to something. And so for all of us, there is someone, something, a person you love, a cause that you care about that means something to you. And it's our human nature that we want to mean something to it as well.
What about all the people? I'm not done with you yet on this.
Oh, I can go all day, man.
What about all the people out there that their goal is to make money?
Yeah, I love those people. I think those people are great. You know what we call those people in the nonprofit sector? We call them philanthropists. We think they're terrific. I spent 20 years doing executive search for nonprofit organizations. And here's why I think I'm the right person to talk about this topic of purpose, because I am actually encouraging people in the book to follow whatever purpose means something to them. And for some people, it may be curing cancer. It may be feeding the poor. It may be educating children and creating equal rights and equal access for all. But for others, it may be buying a Maserati and a beach house. I mean, that's cool too, right? The only person who gets to decide what your purpose is you. And so, you know, I looked up the definition of purpose in the dictionary, like the actual dictionary. And purpose is the reason for which something is done, right? There's no picture of Mother Teresa. There's no judgmental friend wagging her finger at you. It is the reason for which something is done. So if the reason for which you do the work you do is to build the bottom line, is to solve a major problem, is to create a business, is to get yourself out of debt, is to send your children to college for the first, you know, in the generation, is to buy that beach house and that Maserati, that's your purpose. That's it. There's nobody deciding whether your purpose matters except for you. And so the reason behind this book is to help people to no longer feel shackled by the expectations and the burdens of other people deciding what success should mean. Because it turns out that when we do all the right things, we go to the right schools and we get the right internships and we start the right businesses and we fight our way to the corner office, we lean into every single opportunity that comes our way and we try to be all things to all people at all times, we might achieve success. We might get to the top. But my question is, the top of what, right? Because you can't be insatiably hungry for someone else's goal. And so if purpose writ large and lofty is someone else's goal, then it's not going to feel meaningful to you. So if what you want to do, if you're one of all those people who want to make lots of money, awesome, go do it. That's your purpose. And what I'm saying in the book is that's cool too.
Well, so you walked right into my next comment is, you know, I've been an entrepreneur really, that's all I've done my entire career. I couldn't imagine working for somebody else, because I feel like at least the last two decades, I've worked very much on purpose and it was my purpose. How do you find something that's fulfilling in working for someone else's goals?
Well, it really all depends. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur too, right? So, you know, our mutual friend Scott Stratton likes to say that entrepreneur is Latin for bad employee. And I, you know, when I sold my last business to the team that helped me build it, I got a lot of offers to go work for other people. And I one guy wanted me to help expand his business globally and be the head of human resources to recruit his team all over the world. And I said in the interim, like, well, as your temporary chief human resources officer, the first thing I'm going to tell you is to fire me because I'm a terrible employee. I think that some people derive a lot of energy out of working for other people. Some people derive a lot of energy out of working for themselves. You and I are entrepreneurs. I've always wanted to work for myself. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I've had people who have worked for me in the past who like being around an entrepreneurial endeavor, but who themselves are not actually entrepreneurs. And then there are other people who really like the safety of working within something else. And so you and I define the contribution, what work is going to do for us, as this entrepreneurial edge that we have. And other people may define that contribution, that piece of what gives them purpose in their work, as having the safety and security of somebody else having that headache, somebody else having that stress.
Yeah, and I think just to bring a fine point to what you've been saying, I mean, we get to decide what purpose is, right? And I think that that's probably the element that trips people up absolutely the most. I mean, we think that the people that are espousing purpose on Facebook are the people that we should be following, and I think that's where we get tripped up.
Well, I think, you know, we do that all the time. We go like, well, you know, what should I look for? I keep hearing about it should be, you know, balance and happiness and purpose. And my personal favorite, follow your passion, right? As if following your passion is the goal, right? We all want to work within our passion. And I think that's terrific. But you have to expect that your passion's going to beat you up, right? It's going to gut you. It might even gut your bank account on the way to your success at your passion. But as entrepreneurs, we know that if we're doing something about which we are passionate and we fail and we get back up and we fail and we get back up and we fail and we get back up, that's how we develop the grit and the tenacity to become better at the thing about which we actually have passion. And so, you know, I think this knee-jerk reaction to turn to Facebook and Instagram and to decide that that's going to have all the answers is, again, it's the same problem. You know, we spend a lot of our life as young people hearing about all these definitions of success. And, you know, maybe it's the teacher who told you at an early age that, in my case, you know, you're pretty argumentative, you'd be a good lawyer. So we decide we should go to law school, and we spend the next 15 years creating an educational path to get us there. Or maybe it's a parent who tells you that, you know, you'll be happy when you're married and, you know, you've got kids and security, and you go, okay, well, that makes sense. Or maybe it's a boss who tells you about the bottom line of the company and says, well, that's what success means. So you go, oh, okay. Or maybe it's when we're like 17, 18, 19, years old and we don't have a full frontal lobe, but somebody says, pick a college, pick a major, pick a path. And we make this decision and base the rest of our life on that singular idea of that major, that path, that college, when we didn't have the full frontal lobe, you know, the part of our brain that decides rational thinking that actually helps us create good decisions. So we create this path. And so is it any wonder that we turn to Facebook and Instagram and listen to everybody else? Because, you know, we never had a chance to listen to ourselves. And so what I really want people to do in this book is say, well, wait a minute, if success as written for everyone else is defined by everyone else, isn't going to make me happy. Well, what does success mean for me? Like, what would make me happy? And I want people to lean into that instead.
Yeah. And I think one of the real challenges is everybody's saying, find your purpose, find your purpose. Well, I don't think you decide what your purpose is. I think it kind of finds you. But only because you're out there looking for it.
I also think not everyone's going to have a purpose, and that's totally cool too. So in the book, I talk about this idea of consonance, where everything you're doing is sort of in alignment, in flow, where the best person that you are is being put towards the things that you care about the most in the world. And for some people, it's calling, right? It's this idea of, you know, building your business or solving this problem or you know, raising your family, whatever that calling might be. But for others, it might be feeling like you're connected, like the work you're doing actually matters every day. For some people, it might be contribution. Who cares if I've got a calling, and who cares if I've got contribution? I want to make a ton of money, or I want this, you know, I want this work to help me manifest my values into the world, or I just want this job to give me a lot of flexibility so I could go, you know, after work and pursue that hobby about which I'm passionate. And for some people, it's control. They just want to know that they have some agency over the projects to which they're assigned, or the amount of hustle that will bring them the amount of money that they want, or something that they know that the work that they're doing, that the effort they put in, is actually going to see results. And so for each of us, there these four C's of consonants of calling, connection, contribution, and control will mean different things to us. And even within that, at different ages and at different life stages, they'll mean different things as well. So some people may say, you know, I don't really have a purpose. And that's okay. They may say, I don't really have a purpose, but what I really want to do right now is make a lot of money because that will give me the kind of flexibility to do this other thing that I want to do in 5 years or whatever the case may be. You know, I think part of the problem is that we get so wrapped up in this fallacy that purpose is everything, when in fact, for some people, it's really not anything.
I want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by Klaviyo. Klaviyo helps you build meaningful customer relationships by listening and understanding cues from your customers. And this allows you to easily turn that information into valuable marketing messages. There's powerful segmentation, email autoresponders that are ready to go, great reporting. You want to learn a little bit about the secret to building customer relationships? They've got a really fun series called Klaviyo's Beyond Black Friday. It's a docuseries, a lot of fun, quick lessons. Just head on over to klaviyo.com, Beyond BF, Beyond Black Friday. Yeah, and I think there are a lot of people that go out there and decide, I want to make a lot of money, or I need to make money. I need to pay my bills. So I need to figure out how to do that. And I think that they then, I guess what I'm getting is, I mean, it took me probably 10 years to find my calling. I knew I wanted to do something. I knew I didn't feel like I had the confidence that I could go out and get a great job. So what did I do? I started my own business back before, you know, people did such things.
Right.
And it took me at least 10 years to even have a sense that I was supposed to have a calling, I think, sometimes. And I think a lot of times people get caught up in the fact that there's some sort of linear path to this. I think it's more about putting yourself out there and bumping into a lot of stuff.
Yeah. You know, I'd say a lot that, I failure is not finale. Right? Failure is fulcrum. And it's funny, I was actually speaking a couple of weeks ago at Renaissance Weekend, and in the audience was an astronaut who had actually done not one, not two, but three spacewalks, the show off. And he, and I'm giving this whole talk about how we spend a lot of time as adults living in the centers of our excellence. We get hired, we get paid, we get promoted, we get praised for doing the thing that we do best, right? Thing that nobody else in the company can do as well as us. And we don't get paid to take chances and to take risks. We get paid to deliver on the thing we do the best. Whereas our children spend all of this time living on the edge of their incompetence. They spend all of this time trying new things and learning new things. And every year at school, like, you figured out pre-algebra, it's time for algebra. You got algebra, it's time for geometry. Geometry, it's time for trigonometry, on and on. And our children have these unbelievably elastic brains because they're always trying new things, and they fail every day, and that's how they grow, right? They're living right on that bleeding edge of their incompetence. And so I was giving this talk, and I was like, and so failure is not finale. And then I looked at Commander Tim Cooper, and I was like, except for you, sir, for you, failure would most definitely have been finale. But for the other 299 of us in the room, failure should be seen as fulcrum, right? Failure is a thing from which we learn and we grow. And I think this idea that we have to find this one thing, and then we have to stay in that one thing, we figured it out, let's stay there, I think that's another reason why people feel limited. They feel trapped because they are now, you know, the person who they are now the marketer, or they are now the tech guy, or they are now the whatever it is that they are. And I would love to be in a place where we are constantly learning and redefining what purpose means to us, and what our calling is, and how we want to be connected to the work, and all of those things. And I love that it took you 10 years to figure that out, because if you had figured it out, if you had decided what it was early, you probably would never have gotten as good at what you do as you do now, because you wouldn't have gone down all those different roads.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great point, because everyone wants to be an entrepreneur now. And I think you even make a point in the book that you know, maybe about 40-ish is when you should start a business. And that may
Isn't that amazing?
Maybe that's, you know, that has a lot to do with the fact that you have to have that level of life experience maybe for this to make sense even.
I thought that was the most amazing statistic when I came upon it, that middle age is the that's when the entrepreneurs in the middle of their life are the most successful. And, you know, some of it's because they can self-finance, but really it's because they've already figured out what they do best. They figured out who they are. And, you know, the Harvard Business Review talks about this idea of the fundamental state of leadership, you know, who you are when you're at your very, very best. And once you get to that point, you know, I call them the FU 40s, but once you get into the 40s, you're like, ah, whatever, this is who I am, right? Like I'm mostly baked at this point. I've got lots of things I can learn, but I have a pretty good sense of who I am. Like my smarts have begun to turn a little bit into wisdom and I've kind of figured it out a bit, and I'm not going to waste time for all the things for which I'm not that important. And I'm going to double down in the areas where I am. And I'm really going to see, you know, growth and change there.
Well, I'll tell you just from personal experience, that is the point at which I went from not only sort of understanding work that was meaningful to me, but was the point where I also decided that I needed and wanted to make an impact on others.
Yes. And yes.
I think that there may be something in that.
Yes. I mean, it is the moment when you're like, there are things that I do really well and there are things that the world needs, and I could combine those two and I could actually be limitless. This is the idea.
So you talk both good and bad about goals. What's wrong with goals and goal setting, or maybe at least the way we think about it today?
Well, I think we spend a lot of time being asked to set goals before we've really figured out what the world looks like. And that goes for everyone. That goes for the 15, 16, 17-year-olds picking out that college and that major. But I think it also goes for people who are starting a business. I gave a talk at an entrepreneurship class a couple of years ago, and a young woman in the back of the room said, well, you know, what were you going to do if you failed? You know, talking about starting my last business. And I said, well, you're sitting here in an entrepreneur class, or you're an entrepreneur, right? She says, well, yeah, I mean, I want to be. And I'm like, good. What are you going to do if your business plan fails? And she said, well, I mean, I'll just go get a job in a cubicle and write my next business plan and work at that, you know, boring job until I figure out what I'm going to do next. And I was like, great. So you've got a plan B. What are you going to do if you succeed? And she just looked at me like, nobody had ever asked her that question before. And I said, I would encourage you to spend more time thinking about that, right? You've already figured out plan B. You really haven't spent enough time thinking about plan A. And I think what happens is we stand at the bottom of the mountain and we go, I want to go to the top of that mountain, right? That seems good. I want to go to the top of the mountain. Awesome. I'm on the top. But then we get to the top of the mountain, and you know, if you've ever climbed a mountain, that when you get to the top of the mountain, what do you see? Lots more mountains that are much taller. And so if you set your goal from only what you can see in the moment that you set your goal, my guess is that your goals aren't going to be big enough, right? They're not going to be giant. They're going to feel really scary, and you're going to make a plan, but you're going to make a plan and exert your resources, your energy, your money, your interest, your time, whatever it is, only getting part way. So I really encourage people to really set directions more than finite goals.
You have numerous stories in this book from folks that you interviewed, and we have a couple of mutual friends, Tom Webster and Allison Levine, both show up in the book. You want to pick one of their stories and kind of share the lesson in that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could even do both because they're pretty quick. I mean, I could tell you that the interesting part about Tom Webster's story is that he thought that he was unhappy with work, and then he realized really what he was unhappy with was marriage. And so sometimes it's easy to say, well, what's wrong is the job, and he was really focused on the wrong thing. So his story is in there really to help people understand that, you know, sometimes it's easier to change jobs than change marriages, and sometimes you got to look at the whole picture. So that's really why he's in there. And I've had a lot of people who have read early copies write to me and go, oh my God, I'm so relieved because I was feeling like it was only me. So that's his story. But Allison Levine's story, I think, is a wonderful one because Allison, speaking of climbing mountains, Allison Levine was the captain of the first all-women's American expedition up Mount Everest. And Allison got almost all the way to the very top of Mount Everest, like a couple hundred feet of, you know, away from the top of this, you know, tens of thousands of, you know, feet high mountain when bad weather rolled in. And she had to make a decision in that moment. What do I do? Do I go all the way to the top and risk my life and the life of my entire team, or do I turn around and not make it all the way and go back down? And she tells the story both in her own book, On the Edge, which is fantastic, and I would encourage your listeners to pick it up, and also in her speeches, about how she would sit at dinner parties after, and, you know, these like obnoxious guys would always say, oh, so you didn't really climb Mount Everest. You climbed almost Mount Everest. And she was like, okay, yeah. Years later, she actually found herself back on Mount Everest, not intending to be there, but a good friend of hers passed away very young, and she became part of a climb to honor this woman's memory. And she got to the top, and she got to the top long enough to sort of hold up an ice axe with Team Meg written on it, her friend Meg, who'd passed away. And then she turned around and she left. And when she told me this, I was like, wait, you got to the top, you pulled up the ice axe, you took a picture, and then you turned around. Like, don't you celebrate up there for like hours? Like, you got to the top of Everest. And she was like, no, are you crazy? She's like, to do that would just deplete your energy and your oxygen to go back down. And I was like, yeah, but, and she said, Laura, she goes, success isn't getting to the top. Success is getting back down to the bottom alive. And when she told me that story, I thought that was it's the story that I used to close the book. And I thought it was such an incredible story because these obnoxious guys at these dinner parties are like, oh, well, you didn't really succeed. You didn't really get to the top. Well, it turns out that that's not the definition of success. And for each one of us, our definition of success is going to be totally different. And if she had taken that definition of success as whether or not that first expedition was meaningful, then she'd be, in despair, right? She'd be so unhappy about it. But because she didn't have that, because she understood that success was really getting back down to the bottom alive, she felt really great about both experiences. And so, I tell the story because I want people to know that sometimes it's getting to the top. Sometimes it might not be. Sometimes it's turning around. And so for each of us, the idea of success is going to be different, and we have to really understand what it means to us.
I actually read somewhere that 60% of the fatalities on Everest happen on the descent.
Yes. And I think for entrepreneurs, it's not launching the business, right? For you and I as authors, it's not launching the book. It's building the platform and everything that comes after, right? You have to get through the hurdle. Right now, I'm trying to figure out how to make my printer work so I can print out labels to send out early copies of this book. It's vexing me to no end. But for me, it's not about the launch date of the book. It's about the years after the book and the platform and what comes from that and helping change people's lives to the message of the book.
Yeah, I tell entrepreneurs all the time that there are plenty of people that are telling you, how to get to the top of the mountain, and not enough people telling you how to get back down. And I think that's something that is equally as important, because whatever the mountaintop looks like to you, it's actually your life is actually going to be a lot better down in the valley. But that's
absolutely
that's a topic for another podcast, maybe.
Yeah, and if you spend your entire time going, well, I'm not really good enough because other people are defining it this way, then you just spend all this time chasing someone else's goals, and that's why we feel like we're on this hamster wheel.
Yep. So you have an assessment that we can take. So you want to tell us about it, and we'll actually have a link in the show notes so people can come find it.
Yes. So, I've gotten, when I was starting to talk about this with people, they're like, oh, that sounds amazing. I don't know where to start. And I was like, all right, well, let me tell you. So at limitlessassessment.com, and I'll say that again, limitlessassessment.com, your listeners can take a quiz. It's got about 60 questions or so on. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes. And it walks people through each of the four C's of consonants, of calling, connection, contribution, and control. And at the end of this little quiz, you get this beautiful little radar chart. And there's one radar circle that tells you the amount of calling, connection, contribution, and control you have in your life and how much of each you want in your life. And you can see them overlap. And if you're perfectly in consonance, they will be perfectly in consonance and overlapped also. But for the most part, people will see that one arm of it might be further out than another. And that'll show where they're not and what they might want to work on. And so the results of the quiz will give you both what might be holding you back and also some specific tips on things you might want to do to get more of calling, connection, contribution, or control into your life.
Well, great. Well, I will go take it. And if it looks pretty, I'll post it on the blog post too.
Well, yours probably will be, because you're an entrepreneur. And I found that most entrepreneurs have already made specific moves in their life to put themselves in consonance. So if yours is pretty, I'm going to say great. If it's not, we're going to have a conversation.
And I love the word consonants. I did a fair amount of music training. And so I'm going to give you the definition of consonants from a musician. Combination of notes which are in harmony with each other due to the relationship between their frequencies.
I love that.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Laura. Where I guess one last thing, you probably it's probably the same place, but is there any place you want to send anybody to find out more about you and your work as well?
Yeah. So on all the socials, I'm at Hey LGO, like hey there, Hey LGO, and heylgo.com will get you to my website. The book is Limitless: How to Ignore Everybody, Carve Your Own Path, and Live Your Best Life, and it's available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and anywhere fine books are sold.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Laura. Hopefully, we'll see you soon out there on the road.
Excellent. Thank you so much.